Good morning, friends. Welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us. We are approaching the end of chapter 6, the chapter on meditation. And I was just explaining to Lou that try to get as much done in the next two episodes so we can then move on to chapter 7. Mm-hmm. So today we're... Hi, Lou. How are you?
Very good. How are we doing this morning?
Good, good. You know, with this new system, I don't see you. So when that happens, I forget to... actually bring you in. To my apologies.
No worries whatsoever. Just sitting here at the front of the class.
Okay, good. So verse 33. Now, all this time, Krishna has been talking about, you know, how it's necessary to control the mind and stop it from jumping around and all this thing. Now, for the next two verses, Arjuna speaks. Arjuna says, you know, basically says to Krishna, all of what you say is good, well and good, but it's not easy. It can't be done in the long run. Maybe you can do it for a short period of time. So, and then Krishna gives a very good answer. So here it is. Verse 33, Arjuna asks, this yoga of equanimity taught by you, I do not see its enduring stability owing to restlessness. What he's really saying, and what this next, from verse 33 to 39 in chapter 6, the author, Vyasa, is basically reassuring us, because our question in our mind should be, or can be, will be, can a restless mind be controlled? Mm. We know when we sit down to meditation, our mind is rushing all over the place. So essentially, what Arjuna asks on behalf of us is, can a restless mind be controlled? And Krishna, he says, you said the mind is chanchala and asthira. Jumps like a monkey from one branch to the next, can't stop jumping. And even when he's sitting still, he's always fidgeting. That's how the mind is. If the mind is restless, it's unstable, it's incessant movement, insatiable like fire, demanding all the time, disturbing. How can you tell me that I can control it permanently? And Arjuna says, yeah, maybe the mind can be controlled for some time, but I don't see it being controlled for a long time. And he continues his question in verse 34. Verse 34 says, the mind verily, O Krishna, is restless, is turbulent, it's strong and obstinate. I consider it to be as difficult to control as the wind. Mm. He analogizes this to the wind. We've all seen when there are hurricanes and tornadoes, the wind is so powerful, it can really just rip up a house or a building and toss it into the air.
Right.
So, the mind is similar. You have a very cruel mind. One person can be a leader of a country and destroy millions of people because he rises up and riles up everybody in his army or his country against somebody else and can destroy a lot of people. So just like the wind can destroy many people, the mind can. And that's what Arjuna says. Now, in verse 35, Lord Krishna agrees that the mind is restless and difficult to control, but he says it can be controlled with practice and dispassion. Right. In Sanskrit, those words are abhyasena and vairagyena. Abhyasa and vairagya, which means repeated study is abhyasa and dispassion renunciation is vairagya. So Lord Krishna starts off by agreeing with Arjuna that the mind is restless and difficult to control, but he says it can be controlled with dispassion and practice. So there's two lessons to be learned here. The first thing, and this happens a lot, I should have mentioned it in previous verses, but I will from here on in, that the psychology is also being taught here, how to deal with the world, even as you're living in it. And here he's teaching us that when somebody, everybody has a different opinion, not everybody agrees with everything you say. So Krishna teaches us in this how to deal with somebody who is making a point that you don't agree with necessarily. So when Arjuna says, you know, mind can't be controlled, is restless, you can control it for a short time, you can't control it for a long time.
Right.
Krishna could say, what do you know? I'm telling you, I'm Krishna, listen to me. And that usually would lead to an argument.
Right.
So what he does here, very deftly, very tactfully, he starts off by saying, I agree with you that the mind is restless and difficult to control. But then he gently says, with practice and dispassion, It's possible. So he's teaching us a technique in our day-to-day life that whether it be with your spouse, with your boss, with your coworkers, you know, when somebody says something, maybe this is something for us to practice. Instead of saying, I don't think this is possible. How do you say that? I argue with you. It's definitely possible. I disagree with you. It usually ends up in fights between people. Right. So that's one thing. Then Lord Krishna says, with abhyasena and vairagyena. With abhyas means repeated study. When I was a kid, parents used to say, and elders used to say, abhyas. You know, abhyas means study. I always thought that to mean just study from textbooks. But here, it means study to get rid of your habits, for instance.
Right.
And dispassion and renunciation. Now, vairagya, renunciation, can't be done with willpower. So that's a misconception that I also had, that vairagya meant, renunciation meant that you just have to steel yourself and say, I'm not going to do this. But it actually comes more easily with knowledge. As you gain knowledge, you're able to renunciate and have dispassion towards those things that attract you much more easy. To develop a new habit takes time, but it can be done. Habit can be done through abhyasa and vairagya, through repeated study and dispassion. If we change our conviction on something, right? You say, I love sweets. Mm. And you say, I do like sweets, but they're not good for me. I shouldn't be eating sweets. That conviction about sweets being good for me because I like them can be turned into saying, these appear sweet, they appear good, they appear nice to me, but they're really poison for me because I have severe diabetes. I'm heavy, I'm obese. My doctor says I've got to lose weight. This is not good for me. Through vairagya, you can develop, through knowledge of that, dispassion towards those sweets.
You're not required to dislike the sweets. What you're required to is gain knowledge that allows you to combat that liking.
Correct.
Of the sweets.
Correct.
So it balances that liking of the sweets.
Yeah. So whereas in the past I would say, you know, I'm going to grit my teeth and say, I don't want to do this because even though it's tempting me, I'm not going to. You develop more knowledge for why you shouldn't be wanting to do that. So if we change our conviction, then we can change our mind. If I can convince the mind that only the self is real and that the pleasures of the world are like a dream that just go away when you wake up, we can start to change in your activities. No way am I saying that we are going to achieve self-realization in this lifetime. But as you will see in the next 5 or 6 verses, what Krishna says to Arjuna is, even if you don't get self-realization in this world, whatever you have accomplished is going to give you tremendous benefits in the next life, that it's not a waste of whatever you've accomplished. So whatever steps you take to go upwards benefit you. So you're able to draw your mind away from the world, then it actually becomes an upward cycle. As you draw your mind away from the world, you can do more study, more abhyas, more practice, and your mind comes under more control. You start studying on your own, you start serving other people, your desires start to drop. So all of that ends up in this upward cycle. And I can tell you this from personal experience. You know, where I was compared to where I am now, huge difference within myself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to go into more further details. I want to convince all of you how good this is, but it's obviously not something that you might be interested in.
One of the points to this, I think, is that this isn't a light switch type proposition, and it's not zero sum. It's not a matter of you're either self-realized or you're not. There are gains and positive positions to be taking all along the path to self-realization, right? You get better as you go.
So true. You know, I again use an example of my grandchildren that, you know, as you start teaching them and as they start learning, you recognize that they may not be at point Z or Z at this time, but right. Even just to go from point A to point D makes a huge difference. There's an improvement with each step that they take. And so that's what's happening with us. With each step that you take towards self-improvement, your personality becomes calmer, you become less anxious, you become less depressed,
right?
You can focus better, people start to like you, people start to trust you, and your motives are not selfish.
and you can just find peace at certain points in the day. And we're so awash in stress and sins and vasanas that anything we can do to help calm that, even for periods of time during the day, is going to help us immensely.
Not only do you personally find so much more peace, but you can recognize that people around you tend to find themselves trusting you more, finding more peace and happiness in them as they interact with you. There's a huge difference you're making both for yourself as well as for people around you.
Yes, lots of gains to be made here.
Yep. So thank you, Lou. And we will continue next episode. And at that time, we will conclude with chapter 6 and move on to chapter 7.
All right, Gita's Memoirs of a Psychiatrist on the Facebook page. If you want to message us and talk to us, and we encourage that you do that. If you're on the Facebook page and want only audio-only podcasts to carry with you in the car or in your commute, or to just back up and catch up with episodes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, those are the big three, but several other outlets as well. Just check on your favorite podcast outlet, and we'll see you next time, right?
Yes. Thank you so much.